Ecclesiastes chapter 8, please. If you'll open your Bibles there, Ecclesiastes chapter 8. If you don't have a Bible, there'll be something behind me, hopefully. A PowerPoint of the verses and some of the basic ideas. So, Ecclesiastes chapter 8, please. This week, well, not this week, this is the first day of the week. Last week, actually over the last couple of weeks, we have lost two major leaders in the broader evangelical world in America. We lost John MacArthur. Now, John MacArthur was, I don't know about the other one, but John MacArthur was struggling for about a year. I have honestly not read a ton of books by MacArthur, but his book on Strange Fire is a must read. It's the best book ever written on the subject. Good man. This last week, James Dobson died. Now, I'm going to say something very cruel. If you're married, thinking of getting married, thinking of having children, and you haven't read and memorized the New Dare to Discipline, I would just be curious what you've been thinking the rest of your life. Do you think because you survived childhood that you know everything? Today, we're going to do a very serious matter. I'll try to make it humorous, but the title of this morning is Life After Serious Research. This is not a joke. It's not your way or somebody else's way. It's God speaking. And through the whole book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon gets real serious. This is one of those texts. Let's stand, please. Chapter 8, verse 14. Solomon says this: there is a vanity, which is that repeated word, something that you cannot get your hand on, cannot get your mind around, that slips through your fingers. There is a vanity which is done upon the earth, that there be just men or righteous men or women, really, unto whom it happeneth according to the work of the wicked. Well, that's a shocking thought. You mean a person can do right and good things don't always follow? And then he goes on to say, there be wicked men to whom it happeneth according to the work of the righteous. I said that this also is vanity. Then, and this can be either past tense, present tense, it's a lot of it's according to how you're reading this. Then I commended, the King James says mirth. It's not a word we use much anymore, enjoyment. He says, I just commend enjoyment to you. Because a man hath no better thing under the sun than to eat and to drink and to be merry. A little different word than mirth, but both in that happiness, enjoyment sphere. So he says, I commend mirth because that a man hath no better thing under the sun than to eat and to drink and to be merry. And then he makes a strange statement that I actually was confirmed of this week. For that meaning those kinds of things, enjoying the simple things in life, your food, the sunrise, the sunset, the day-to-day activities, eating, drinking, people. He says, for that shall abide with him of his labor the days of his life, which God giveth him under the sun. When I applied, and here's the serious nature, when I applied my heart, the Hebrew word natan is applied, I gave my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done upon the earth. For also there is that neither day nor night see asleep with his eyes. Then I beheld all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. Because though a man labor to seek it out, yet he shall not find it. Yea, farther, though a wise man think to know it, yet shall he not be able to find it. I'm going to talk about life after serious research. We're going to look at three big ideas. I'm not going to preach them in order. I'm going to preach the first one, the third one, and then the second one in that order. We're going to talk about this text this morning. Father, help me as I try to share. I really nothing that's not said, stated directly here, and frankly, over and over and over and over and over in the book of Ecclesiastes. Fundamental pastors want to run to verse 12, 13 and 14 of chapter 12 and escape the brutality of these texts. But the brutality of these texts is exactly where we all live. Help me this morning as I try to share these ideas with Lake County Baptist on this Lord's Day. In Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. I have a belief. By the way, no offense to you, everybody. No offense to you. Personal. I have a belief. If you're doing something you have never done, wouldn't it be a wise individual that would learn every single thing they can about that? I can't hear you. So you're getting married. Do you think you're special? You're having children. Do you think you're special? I have in my office upstairs, I believe, James Dobson's book. You got to hear me exactly. Dare to Discipline. I didn't say new Dare to Discipline. I said Dare to Discipline. Because I'm going to stop until everybody's refocused here. It's not your problem. It's everybody else that finds it entertaining. We're talking about life, and I am finding there are people that do not have enough character to even say, maybe I should learn something. I read James Dobson's book, Jenny, it was your book, from Bob Jones, hardback. I read that book, Dare to Discipline. It was the greatest book I had ever read on child rearing until I read the new Dare to Discipline. You say, what was the difference? The new Dare to Discipline had all the funny stories. The first one was more academic. Friend, that book did two things for me. Anybody that I have performed their wedding knows this. I always have couples read the book for two reasons. Number one, it will help you in your child rearing. And number two, it will help you with the most important thing in your life, your childhood. Because you bring your childhood to life. Yes or no? You bring it all. And by the way, sitting around doing a pious or blowing Pastor Warren off, you know, after 4 weeks at home, I'm done with that stupid. We need to grow up. You bring everything. And by the way, James Dobson's book helped me to reconcile with my father and his anger. Did you hear me? It's not a sermon on James Dobson. I thought that's how Christians thought. Well, first week of January this year, I'll make this brief as I can. I was walking between my bathroom and my bedroom upstairs on flat surface doing nothing, just walking, and my left knee felt like somebody had torn it off that quick. Oh, I was in agony. Of course, I am a man, which means I am stubborn, bullheaded. Cabeza dura, matigas angulo, whatever term you use. I hoped it would get better. I even prayed that it would miraculously get better. I had other people pray that it would, because you say why? I didn't want to have any surgeries. I thought maybe it would be okay. I hate to confess this, up until the first week of April, I was still looking for tickets for vacation. Are you listening? In Peru. And I wanted to go back because I love Cusco. Cusco, by the way, is 12,000 feet in the mountains. How do you think I would be walking at 12,000 feet in the mountains with no knee? Yes. Finally, I said to Jenny, I'm going to go see the doctor. The doctor said, well, we'll do an x-ray. After we look at the x-ray, he says, I'll put you on anti-inflammatories. They helped a little bit. And then that didn't help much. And he said, well, you need to go see a doctor that specializes in knees. I went to see him. He was a nice guy. He said, well, everything I do here is a Band-Aid. Oh, great. He said, but I'll give you a shot in your knee and see if that helps. By the way, for about a week, it helped. Then it was worse than it was before. Finally, on vacation, I realized I could not walk. Folks, normally on vacation, my wife and I walk 3 to 5 to 7 to 9 miles a day. That's normal. Our vacations are out places, walking. I couldn't hardly walk to the hotel room. Then my good friend Kevin Bowder said to me, in not very nicely, he said, Ralph, he says, if you're in pain now, you'll still be in pain 6 months from now. He says, the only difference will be you'll be 6 months older. He says, you need to have the surgery. Okay. We had our missions conference, and I scheduled my surgery for the day of my mom and dad's anniversary. That was a blessing, so I can remember it. But before I did that, I talked to people. I talked to the doctors. I talked to nurses. I talked to people who had had knee replacement. I thought I had most of it figured out. I wanted to know what to expect. And what I learned was, well, number one, it's a hard surgery. Srijit, thank you for telling me. Srijit has actually practiced this surgery at least once. Is that correct? And you enjoy the violence of the surgery. Is that correct? I mean, is it a violent surgery, Srijit? It is. So I kind of got that from my friend Srijit, that it was not going to be pleasant. I knew the recovery would be painful. I had a few surprises along the way. The first surprise happened in, by the way, you say, what's this got to do with the text? Every single thing we're talking about is learning and learning things. My first surprise was they roll me out of the OR and I'm waking up. Is that the right term? I'm not awake, but I'm half awake. And there is a lovely Filipina lady sitting there, and I speak to her in Tagalog, and she goes this, and, you know, lovely lady. And I talk to her, and she talks to me, and she says to me the most amazing thing. She says, can you move your toes? I still remember what I told her. I said, ma'am, I can't move my toes. Does that scare you? Scared me. I said, I can't move my toes. I was under about 4 layers of blankets. She peeled back the blanket so I could see, because there's something that protrudes in the middle that sticks up. She pulled the blankets back. I could see my toes. And while I'm telling her, I can't move my toes were going like this. I couldn't feel that I couldn't move my toes. The feeling and the movement were separate. That was weird. Very weird. Well, that nice lady gave me some apple juice. She gave me some graham cat crackers, and I drank that and ate that and finally got done. And then she says, well, in order to leave today, you have to be able to do 2 things. She says, you have to be able to walk with a walker. By the way, men, have you dreamed of walking with a walker? I am assuming every man in here, macho guy, just can't wait till he gets his walker. Atong is not here. Listen to me. When that buzzard gets back, I have that walker of mine. I'm giving it to him. And I told him, and there's no scratches on it either. It's still in good condition. I had to walk down the hallway on a walker, which was okay. And then I had to walk up steps, 5 steps, and walk down 5 steps. And then they said, if you can do that, you can go home. Not a problem. But that's the second surprise. I got home. Jenny drove me home. Got home. I don't know exactly when. I said, Jenny, let's go outside and let me walk down, up and down the road with the walker. Got the walker. Walked up and down the road. No machoism. No problem. The next day, the therapist comes and I tell her, yeah, I walked up and down the road yesterday 3 times. She goes, you did what? I forgot to tell you, that's the second surprise. The drugs you're under in surgery don't wear off for a day. So it was a day and a half later when all the drugs were out of my system, and then I was screaming, and then I couldn't move, and then I couldn't do anything. The first day was nice, very nice. Well, did you have any other surprises? Yes. No, I haven't used the walker since the first couple of days. I used the crutch or around the house, nothing. I had to come home. I could walk up and down our stairs. Last night for 33 minutes, I walked up and down the driveway until I discovered the last thing I want to share with you. I can't put my left sock on. Folks, I promise you there's a lot of things in life I don't mind, but I'm a man that doesn't like my wife fiddling with me. I don't like her fiddling with my collar. Stay away from me. I don't like that kind of, and here she is humbly putting my sock on. So this morning, I could have been here early, but I couldn't get my sock on. She had to put it on. That's life. Well, I think behind me this statement. Solomon is looking at life. He's doing so seriously. Can I say this? Some of us are of age. Some of us are no longer 21. We're not 25. Some of us are 50, and we still can't look at life seriously. Life is kind of like, I do whatever I want to do. There comes a time for that serious, I say soberly, painfully, and even brutally, looking at the way life is. What does he find? Well, we'll start with the first point. Chapter 8, verse 14 says this, there is a vanity, folks, for you, for your children, for your grandchildren, for your parents, for your grandparents, in every direction. This is the truth. This is his first discovery, so to speak. He says, there is a vanity which is done upon the earth, that there be just men, or a righteous man, or let's use other language, a good man, not perfect, not sinless, but someone doing right, someone doing the right things, the good things, the just things. But strangely, unto whom it happeneth according to the work of the wicked. So instead of him being rewarded in some way, he is punished. Then it goes on to say, there be wicked men to whom it happeneth according to the work of the righteous. He said, I said that this also is vanity. I have several simple thoughts, friend. Life, in general, has been fair to me, in general. You'll probably never get around me and thinking, oh, woe is me, life is so bad. By the way, for me, life in general has been fair, more or less. Actually, most of the time, more than fair to me, but not always. And certainly not for all people. So I want everyone to say, I want to say this, and I'm going to look around the room because I see a few people I don't know. Some of you are young Christians. Some of you are new here that I don't know at all. So let me just say this to you. You, your children, your grandchildren, your parents, your great-grandparents, in every direction, life is not always fair. Can I say that again? Life is not always fair. You say, but I'm going to do right. You really think you're going to control reality? I'm going to dot every I, cross every T, get all of my, and I say ducks in a row. Can I say this? The average person in this room has never lived in the Mississippi River Valley. You don't even know what it means to have ducks in a row. I grew up with the ducks lining up, and you could see them tens of thousands go down the riverways. Friends, you can do all of that. Most of the time, it's good. Most of the time, it pays off. But sometimes, it doesn't. Life might be unfair, or say it's the same thing, might not be fair. That's the way it is. So, to give you my first example, because I think some of us don't hear me. I have a son and a daughter. Do you all have children? Let me ask you a second question. Do you love your children? Some of you aren't sure. Jennifer, I understand Jim on that one, but at least on half of the equation. But I won't say which half, okay? You can debate which half. I love my children. John always had an ability at singing. Now, of course, you know, I've come to realize many people think their children can sing. John had ability very early on. Somewhere in high school, John got some lessons, and then somewhere after that, my wife, she did 100% of it. I did 0%. She did 100. Is everybody clear? Started taking John to the Lyric Opera in Chicago to have professional voice lessons. By the way, that was a big investment. You had to drive there, you had to drive home, and I don't know, was it $100 a lesson or something? It was a lot of money. We felt like our son was worth investing in. Well, some of you were here then. He's a junior in high school. In the junior in high school, he competed at the Illinois State Christian Association for Voice, and he not only got a blue ribbon, he was first in the state, which meant he could then go to nationals at Bob Jones and compete against the best out of every state in the nation. Well, he won first in the state. He went to Bob Jones. I went with him that time. I heard him sing. I heard every single other person sing. And I'll just say it, take it or leave it. You do whatever you want because you won't hear what I'm saying. He won first in the nation as a junior in high school. And there was nobody, in my opinion, close. You say, you're the father. No, I'm brutally honest about stuff like that. You have no idea. But let's go back to the second stage. And then John comes home, and now he's, what's after junior in high school? He's a senior in high school. Still taking lessons in Chicago, still practicing. I don't know if he's as enthusiastic as he was, but he was prepared. He was ready. He goes to the Illinois State Association here in Illinois, which some of you think I don't know things. It is interesting to me how people look at me thinking that I'm a naive old nut. I just don't get things. By the way, I get power plays right up front. Tim Kowak. The state of association has been filled with power plays as back to the beginning in the 70s. I could name the pastors, but I will not. I will refrain. Certain people won because they went to the right church. So John won the national singing opera for the whole nation, and the next year he didn't even place in the state of Illinois. Jenny, I remember, I don't remember if you remember, I said things to you like this, so I'm going to say them to you this morning. Are you all ready? I said things like this. Mrs. Warren, I think it's good for John to fail. I think it's good for John to lose. I think it's good for John to experience politics. I think it's good for John not to be number one. Did any of you just hear what I just said? I have a philosophy. I'm going to give it to you in a couple different ways. Seems to be obvious to me. By the way, I have in your notes, this is vanity. By the way, this is what Solomon says. This isn't one of the good parts of life. It's vanity. You wish it wasn't true, but it is true. Life doesn't always give you exactly what you want. You say, but I was, forget all that stuff. Life has elements of vanity. I have a statement, a quote that I made probably 20, 25 years ago in this church. I'm going to rehab it in a different direction this morning. I say this 20, 25 years ago, life wouldn't be so hard if we didn't think it was going to be so easy. You go out into the world and you think everything is easy? Good luck. By the way, Solomon is saying, there's a vanity to this life. You say, wait a minute, Pat, I came to church to hear about Jesus and living this higher life and not having problems. What planet are you from? Do you think Ecclesiastes is not part of the Bible? It's teaching the same things, friend, but life has some disappointments, not always fair. My rehab statement, and I like it a lot, is the next. Life wouldn't be so unfair if we didn't think it was going to be so fair. I think our problem is, I think we have children and adults in this room to think everything is going to be perfectly fair. Really? Wait till you get passed over. Wait till you don't, wait till you don't get the promotion. Wait till you don't get the job. I'm going to quote my friend Robert. Robert, you probably won't even remember this. I remember, Robert, when you decided, and I'm thankful, by the way, just so you know, that you decided to retire here, you and your lovely wife, Mutya. But Robert then had to get a job. How did you like that process of getting a job, Robert? I remember Robert saying something, and maybe you remember this, maybe you don't. He says something like this. It's like being in a beauty contest, but you ain't winning. By the way, how many people like to be told, well, you're okay, but you're not really number 10. You're like number 14. That's part of it. Well, recently, I got a text from a friend of mine. By the way, is everybody with me? Are you listening? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about? Or do you really think because you're special, I'm perfect, I got it all lined up? My group, whoever your group is, we walk on water. Yes, you walk on water until the ice breaks. And then the fairness thing comes. It's not fair that I didn't get this. And I'm telling you, Solomon is clearly saying, can we read the text again? Look back at verse 14, please. Can we read it one more time? He says, there is a vanity, something that you can't get your head around or that slips through your fingers, which is done upon the earth. That there be just men or women, righteous, good, godly, any of those names, unto whom it happeth according to the work of the wicked. What? And he says again, there be wicked men to whom it happeth according to the work of the righteous. Life might be unfair. It might not be fair. Well, recently, happens a couple times a year, a friend of mine texts me. When I say friend, you know, we're friends. We're not close for 1,000 reasons. When I left this church in 1981, I went to Dire Mercy Hospital, or Our Lady of Mercy Hospital in Dyer, Indiana. I worked in the laboratory. I started in the lowest grade in the lab. After a year or two, they made me the middle, and then they made me the boss of PMs and Midnights. I developed friendships with four guys there. Four men became friends that lasted longer than that place. The chief pathologist, Dr. Duran, the lab manager, Jerry Godshaw, and the daytime manager, Jay Wagner. The four of us became friends. So when I left Chicago area, moved to St. Louis in 1988 to pastor, we would come back here at Thanksgiving every year. One day, I would drive over to Dyer to the hospital in the afternoon, evening. I'd get to the hospital, and the four of us would go out to eat at a Japanese steakhouse close by. We did this for probably 7 of the 8 years I pastored there. Now comes to all from up here to over here and everybody in between. Here's that fairness you've been thinking about. Well, it happened to Jerry Godshaw first. Jerry was the lab manager. He had been there since dirt, 30 years. He had a master's degree. He was educated. He was good at what he did. And they decided to promote Jerry out of the laboratory and give him like a VP billet. Is that good? Within 1 year of promoting him out of the laboratory to a VP billet, they downsized the hospital and his job was the first one cut. Where is your fairness? I'm listening to your fairness stuff. By the way, Solomon is saying here, there's just unfairness in life. That was the first step. The second step was worse. Dr. Drin, I can't remember where he went to for his undergrad. I don't remember his undergrad degree. I don't even know. I can't really remember where he went for his medical degree, but it was a prestigious place. And then he went to pathology, which was a 3-year internship. And then he got, because he was a lightweight, he went to Mayo Clinic and spent a year or two or three in a fellowship. A real lightweight, by the way. Had an MD and a PhD. Lightweight. Dr. Drin was the medical director of the laboratory. Very smart guy. One of the few doctors, sorry, Srijit, doctors tend to be very good at what they do, but when I look at wide education, most of them aren't. He had that too. The guy's a wide reader, great thinker. Dr. Drin became the pathologist in charge in 78 before I got there in 81. He and I were friends. We're still friends. After I went to St. Louis, Jerry Godshaw's head was cut off first. He was downsized out after being promoted. Secondly, Dr. Drin had a friend He had a friend that was in charge of the business of pathology because he was the head at this hospital, but they were part of a group, four or five hospitals, St. James, St. Margaret, Mercy, St. Margaret's in Hammond, a couple other hospitals west. It was a group. His friend was in charge of the finances and all the decisions of that variety. Dr. Durand was just a doctor. He wanted to do what he did in the laboratory. His friend, are you ready? His friend legally edged him out. And he lost in the 1980s, late 80s, his $450,000 a year job because of his, say it, his friend. Mm-hmm. That was the second one. How do you like that? I'm going to come back to, by the way, some of you aren't really with me this morning. You're thinking I'm going to walk out into the world and people are going to say, "Welcome to America. We're so happy." I'm telling you this, I've already said, my life mostly has been very fair. And in most cases, more than fair. Has it always been fair? I'm not going to talk about me. See, I'm talking about other people. So you can't play your little game while he's just talking about himself. I'm talking about life. Oh, I forgot. There were four of us. I resigned, of course, and moved into the pastorate. Dr. Durand was edged out by his friend. Jerry Godshaw was promoted in order to be cut. And then Jay Wagner, they decided to take all these laboratories and move them off campus to a central lab. Jay was in charge of because he was a man of excellence. They fired him there. So I quit going back to Dyer Mercy Hospital because all my friends were gone. Can I say this to you, friend? That's not why I told you the story. Can I tell you why I told you the story? This is from Messenger, and it's part of an ongoing story. And I was joking with him about him getting old. He's 76. He says, "I'm 76. I'm only working part-time now." He says, "Ralph, I can't remember that far back." He says, "I've been a medical director at three different hospitals since Our Lady of Mercy." Can I tell you what that means to me? Look at me in the eyes. He was done wrong. I've been done wrong. Grow up. That's part of life. People are not always honest. People are not always nice. People are not always kind. Christians should know this going into the world. And yet we're just shocked. My child. Oh, please. Get over your child. Everybody. And I say it again. When it happened to my son, I mean it. I think that was the best thing that ever happened to him. You get over your ego. You get over your beauty. Then you just do what's right and move forward and expect God to do good things, and whatever God has for you is good. Well, I'm going to move on. Life wouldn't be so unfair if we didn't think it was going to be fair. And of course, for all of you in this room, I don't know everybody if you're a Christian. My last conclusion under this main point is this. And besides, who wants life to be absolutely fair? Everyone look at me, please. Do you want life to be absolutely fair? If you get exactly what you deserve, what would that be? Judgment, hell, because there's not a person in this room that doesn't sin. By the way, this love affair with, it's got to be fair, and they did this, and this doctor, and that boss, and that person, oh, shut up that stuff. None of that's going to help you. Here's Dr. Durand. I believe he's a believer. He just moved on. And he's been medical director at several hospitals since then and is doing fine. Well, as the Bible teaches, you don't want fair. Romans 4 on the bullet behind me. What shall we say that Abraham our father as pertaining to the flesh hath found? For if Abraham were justified by works, he hath whereof to glory, but not before God. You see, if you could somehow get all your ducks in a row, you could brag about yourself. You could glory in yourself. But you couldn't do it before God. For what saith the scripture? Abraham simply believed God, and it was counted unto him for righteousness. Paul then concludes. He says, listen, now to him that worketh is the reward not reckoned of grace, but of debt. If you're going to try to work your way and get your ducks in a row and be perfect and live on your high horse, you're going to make God a debtor. And by the way, God is no man's debtor. But on the other hand, verse 5, but to him that worketh not. Because why? You can't get your ducks. You cannot be perfect. You cannot be sinless. And by the way, I'm a good testimony of that. But to him that worketh not, but believeth on him that justifieth the ungodly, his faith is counted for righteousness. Friend, we come to God through Jesus Christ and him alone. And you say, is it fair? No, it's not fair at all. We come to God through the righteousness of Christ put on our account. All we do is believe, trust, repent, come, call, believe, all of those kinds of language. We come to Christ, he saves us, and it's not fair. I'm going to skip Ephesians 2, 8, and 9 for time. Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verse 16, if you would, it'll be behind me also. He says, when I applied mine heart, so I want you to get beyond any question, Solomon is thinking serious thoughts about this life. Life might be unfair, might not be fair. That's his first thought. His third thought is found more in verse 17. Look at verse 17. He says, then I behold all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. You cannot find it out. Why? Because though a man labor to seek it out, yet he shall not find it. Yea, further, though a wise man think to know it, yet shall he not be able to find it out. The second discovery, the first one, life might be unfair or might not be fair. The second one, life might not be understandable. There might be things in life that you can't figure out, that you can't understand, that you can't grasp. For time, I'm not going to focus on this. I'm going to move on to the next point. I want to say this. Everyone look at me. Do you know what I have said this morning? I want to ask you a question. When you walk out the back, did any of you listening? Do you realize life might not be fair? And do you realize life might not be understandable? Hear me. We're going to quickly read the verses. This is a repeated phrase in Ecclesiastes. And yet I have Christians come to me and say, I don't understand. Can I say this to you? That doesn't impress me. There are many things we can't understand about God in life. We'll quickly read the verses. Chapter 3, verse 11. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Also, he has set the world or eternity in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning of to the end. I mean, for the very purpose, you're not going to understand it all. Chapter 7, verse 14. In the day of prosperity, be joyful. In the day of adversity, consider. God also has set the one over against the other. For what purpose? To the end that man should find nothing after him. You're not going to get it all. Verse 23. All this have I proved by wisdom. I said, I will be wise. But it was far from me. Verse 24, that which is far off and exceeding deep, who can find it out? Chapter 11, verse 5, as thou knowest not what is the way of the spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all. You're just not going to get it. Well, we come to the last idea. I should never have to say this. Friends, please look at me. This is the most repeated phrase in Ecclesiastes. Hey, I have this question for you. By the way, preaching is always about you asking questions of text, not trying to stay awake. Here is my question. Why does God repeat this phrase so many times? It's just like over and over and over. It's like, why do you keep doing that? Why does Solomon keep coming back to the same ideas? Well, chapter 8, verse 15. Then I commended mirth, or joy, enjoyment, because a man hath no better thing under the sun than to eat and to drink and to be merry. By the way, he's not talking about parties. He's talking about a person that can come to just enjoy the goodness of God in the fact that they had a hamburger yesterday, or that they were with friends, or that they got to walk along the lake shore, or that they got to smell some beautiful flowers. Just the normal eating, drinking, that's pretty mundane. That's pretty everyday. And to be merry. Then it says this, I'll pick up on this later. For he that shall abide with him, for that, those memories, those things, shall abide with him of his labor the days of his life. That's weird, which God giveth him under the sun. I have said, life might not be fair, might be unfair. I have said, according to Solomon, life might not be understandable. Number three, his most repeated phrase in the entire book, life should be enjoyed. It should be enjoyed. Ecclesiastes 2:24, there's nothing better for a man than he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw, that it was from the hand of God. Chapter 3, verse 12. I know that there is no good in them, but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor, it is the gift of God. Chapter 3, verse 22. Wherefore I perceive that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his portion. By the way, rejoice. Chapter 5, verse 18, the fullest of all the text outside of 9. Behold, that which I have seen, it is good and comely or appropriate for one to eat and to drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor that he taketh under the sun all the days of his life. Stop. Sorry to bore you. Why does he have to tell you this over and over and over? Because we're not listening. We want joy. We want happiness. The way we want it. He's saying, you know how you find joy in life? Simple things. Light. By the way, I'll say it in a funny way. You find joy in life. In life. Boy, that's a shocker. You know what life is? You get up in the morning. Now, for some of you, if you're more spiritual than me, you smell the coffee. I'm not spiritual. I smell the tea. I drink a nice hot cup of Irish breakfast tea. You say, what does it do for you? It's just nice. I drink a bottle of water. My wife brings me all of these drugs that I don't want to be on. And she says, here, old man, take them. By the way, that's life. You know what else? Well, I'll get to it as we look forward. I'm not going to read chapter 9, verse 7 through 9. Folks, this is just, I asked you a question. Some of you still aren't even listening. Why does God have to tell you this over and over and over? Because we try to find joy in other places. We don't find joy in the normal stuff. Well, that is until your kids grow up and move away from home. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, my child is... You should have been having the moments of joy all the way along. By the way, my daughter said something to me recently. I don't like her very often, and I didn't like it when she said this. She said, Dad, I'm not rearing children. I'm rearing adults. What's the goal of your parenting? Yeah. Well, let me give you some thoughts. I'll try to illustrate it. Have my wife join in with this. Here are my thoughts. From this text, we need to learn to enjoy, to find joy. But we find joy and we enjoy in what God gives us. The normal stuff, folks, normal stuff. We'd find it under the sun. That's found two times in verse 15. Upon the earth, parallel to that, under the sun has two meanings in the book. It means as far as the sun goes, from one side to the other, or whichever, yeah, this is the correct direction here, from one side to the other. And it also means under heaven. Let's not always be pious, because piousity can become the lie. I'm so spiritual. Okay, but if you're spiritual and godly, you enjoy the life God gives you. That's the point. So to enjoy, to find joy in what God gives us under the sun, in the normal stuff. Can I say it this way? In the small stuff today. Today. Not in the past, not in the future. Today. You get up and you enjoy what God gives you today. This summer, my wife and I went on a vacation. We got to see a lot of beauty. I couldn't walk, so we had to watch. First place we went was Washington Island. Anybody in this room been to Washington Island? I know you guys have, back here. Door County. Some of you like it. Someplace in Wisconsin, someplace, it sticks off into the lake. You go to the end, there's an island. We went to Washington Island. A lot of beautiful things there. Mike and Pam says it's too slow for them. Mike likes action. Or he likes shops. I know what he likes. It was slow. We got to see some pretty things. Jenny, the most memorable thing we did on Washington Island that will stick with me 10 years from now is? No, that's what you liked. Lavender. There's a lavender farm. That's not your favorite experience. We went to a place and they sold the best burgers you've ever had in your mouth.
and we set out. I couldn't walk, and we set out, and Jenny got a big old burger. It was about that big, somewhere in there, and she got fries and stuff and a milkshake, and I'm eating my burger. No fries. I don't cheat. But I did look at my wife and said, you know, that burger's really good. I think I need a second one. You say, what else was your favorite? By the way, folks, we saw beauty. We went up to the Apostle Islands, took the cruise out into the Apostle Islands on the other side of the Upper Peninsula, way up high, beautiful. Then we went and stayed with the Bowders. We had a great time. And then we was going to see Chuck and Shelley Ells. So we're driving up to Chuck and Shelley's, and Kevin says, we need a postage stamp. I'm telling you my favorite memories from the vacation. Are you ready? You're thinking, woo, I got to go some. Folks, get over all of what. You know, the only thing you remember is the small stuff. So we pull into Walmart in the big town of Ashland, Wisconsin. Is it Wisconsin? By the way, I'd heard of Ashland, never wanted to go there. Went to Ashland, Wisconsin. I didn't want to walk in Walmart because my knee was hurting. So I said, Kevin and Debbie, you guys go in, Jenny and I'll sit in the car. I turned on my Kindle. I was real deep into a book. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw some people walking. I'm like, how is Mike and Pam Hall walking into the parking lot of Ashland, Wisconsin? At the same time, by the way, there were two Walmarts we could have gone to. They were equal distance. Kevin said, I'd go to Ashland. And there's Mike and Pam. We got a picture of them out in the parking lot. Then we went inside, found Kevin and Debbie. Can I say that that was more exciting than the Apostle Islands? Hello. Oh, I'm going to be happy when I take the cruise to Norway. By the way, look at me. I hope you take the cruise to Norway. I hope you love it. You know what you'll remember? Small things. Because you don't remember big things. You remember you remember life. You either enjoy life or you don't enjoy life. Normal stuff, small stuff. Well, my favorite experience of the whole vacation, frankly, Chuck and Shelley Ells. Yes. Years ago, my wife and I were in Mexico, and we got to go to, well, we've been to Chiapas many times. We went up into the mountains to the city of San Cristobal de las Casas because it's a place of beauty. We drove up, and we couldn't wait to get there because of all the guidebooks said, beautiful place, blah, blah, blah. And by the way, beautiful place. San Cristobal de las Casas in Chiapas. Beautiful place. That's not what do you remember? On the way there, I said, you know, I'd love to have some pizza. What's the chances of getting good pizza in San Cristobal de las Casas? Zero. Pretty close to zero. We're driving up. We're not looking at anything. We're just driving up. And right there's a pizza place. We pull in, and there was some guy. Do you remember where he was from? I don't. The guy was not from Mexico. And we had some of the best pizza we've ever, and that's what I remember from San Cristobal de las Casas, is we had good pizza with friends. Psalm 46, verse 10. Be still. Friends, here it is. Life might not be fair. Might not be. Not altogether. On the other side, you're not always going to understand it, but it should be enjoyed. Be still and know that I am God. By the way, not noisy, not loud, be still. That's when you get to enjoy the different things. I'll close this morning with this. I talked to my uncle, which doesn't tell you anything. I have a lot of uncles, but not too many alive. Only on my mom's side, only four alive now out of the nine. Five are gone. I talked to the oldest uncle. I learned one thing hilarious. His name, we called him since childhood, and everybody in the family, including his children and his wife, calls him Kook. Like crazy. That doesn't mean anything. It was a name given by one of the uncles when he was a little kid. And his older brother, Uncle Don, was called Bug. When I grew up, Uncle Bug, Uncle Kook, that's just what you call him. Well, somewhere in the last 60 years, I found out that Uncle Kook's name is not Franklin, is Franklin. If I called him Franklin, he would wonder who was calling him. Jenny, did you know what his real name is? It's not Franklin. His real name is John Franklin. I said, Uncle Kook, I'm 68 years old. Does my mother know your real name is John Franklin? He said, no. Nobody knows my real name because somebody messed up on the birth certificate, wrote in John. It wasn't supposed to be there. But that's not what I want to tell you the story. Now, everybody take a breather. Pastor Kwok, you will understand 100%. Some of you will not have a clue what I'm going to say. I'm going to be speaking Polish to you next. We talked for an hour nearly. I love my Uncle Kook. He's probably one of the most best conversationalists that just enjoys life, what I'm talking about. By the way, his life is perfect. His wife of 65 years is totally bedridden and totally mentally gone. Other than that, life is perfect. He just enjoyable. I mean, I'm like, I could call you every night. My favorite part was he said, when I was a boy in high school, he's the only boy that graduated from high school of the older ones. He said, when the summertime, I went over to Uncle Ed and Aunt Mary's, for me, great Uncle Ed and great Aunt Mary, or Uncle Lawrence and Aunt Ruth's house farm to help to make a little money. He said, I have so many good memories. He was laughing and telling stories. And then he said, but I always knew if I went to Aunt Lawrence and Uncle Ruth's, Aunt Ruth would say, if you work here for a week, I get you one day. And he said, that one day, I almost didn't want to go. One day every week, Aunt Ruth gave him a job. Now, I'm going to say this gently and kindly. I grew up around cattle. Cattle manure does not bother me. Pig manure, I can do without. There's something tenfold worse than pig manure. Chicken manure. He said, Aunt Ruth made me work cleaning out the chicken coop every Wednesday. And folks, that stuff is toxic. It's nasty. And he laughed. And I'm thinking to myself, look at me. He's 89 years old. And do you know what he remembers? Aunt Ruth having him take out the chicken coop. And he's smiling and laughing. Look at me in the eyes. And some of you don't have a life. You're miserable. You always want to go someplace, get something, and then finally you'll be happy. You'll be happy for 30 seconds until the toy gets dim. Or you can say, you know what? I think I'm going to enjoy the life God's given me. I'm going to enjoy every piece of it. I'm going to enjoy when my buddy Jesse, I went down to see him on my one day here this week, went down to see him in first grade with Sister Carly. I walked in and Jesse scooted up and gave me a big hug and I told him I loved him. And then when I was walking back down the way and I was just about to go outside, Jen Rush came in. Wasn't it you, Jen Rush, with the little guys, Evan? Evan looked at me. Look at me in the eyes. I'm going to enjoy every minute of the life God gives me. Let's pray, please. Father, these seem to be simple things. Maybe it starts with salvation. Maybe it all goes back to drinking at the well of salvation, knowing that we can never please you, we can never do enough because we're sinful. And we have our own sin problems. Father, thank you for your amazing grace that saves us. For those in this room that are not yet saved, Lord, that's the place they need to begin. For many of us, we haven't done much serious in a long, long time. Our life is kind of shallow. It's kind of bopping around, popping up here, popping up there, hoping to have 5 seconds of pleasure when we could be enjoying you every moment of every day in the normal stuff, the small stuff. Yes, even the chicken coop. 70 plus years later, Uncle Kook laughing and enjoying the fact that he got to spend time with Uncle Lawrence and Aunt Ruth and got to work on the farm, learn some things, make a little money, and help Aunt Ruth out with gathering the eggs and once a week, chicken coop. Help us to hear, I ask in Christ's name. Amen.